know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is all scenes apart.
Welcome to We Love No Other podcast from IlliniBoard.com. I'm the host, Robert Rosenthal. Today is a conversation I just wrapped up with head coach Brett Bielema. Last year at this time, I had interviewed him at Penn State the day he was hired as Illinois head coach, and I kind of wanted to do a follow-up 1 year later. I guess 1 year later would have been Sunday, the 19th, something like that. Probably couldn't interview him on a Sunday, but that was the plan here. And so I just wrapped that up. A lot of good stuff in here. I'm really excited. If you don't know the story of that interview, I was already planning to go cover the Illinois at Rutgers basketball game on December 20th last year, and then the Penn State basketball game on the 23rd. And the week of those games is when they added the bonus game during the Big Ten championship game. And they just added a bonus game because of COVID. That was Illinois at Penn State. So last year, that's what I did. If I was already going to be in New Jersey on the 20th, why not be in the middle of Pennsylvania on the 19th? So that Saturday, I left at like 5:30 a.m. and headed toward State College. And somewhere between Indianapolis and Columbus is when Brett Bielema was named head coach at Illinois. And it was announced that he was heading up from... You know, he was a Giants linebackers coach at the time. He was heading up from New Jersey to State College to be there for the Illinois game that night and to see his new team. And so that gave me the opportunity, since I was the only media member to make that trip, to get an interview with him. So it was a lot of fun for me. I got to do the first interview. He was gracious enough to agree to do a one-year follow-up with me today. So... that's what this is. I'll just get right to it. There's nothing after it. There's no tag. It's just my interview with him. So let's get right to it. My talk with head coach Brett Bielema. It's been a year,
right,
since you and I talked at Penn State underneath the stadium.
Yep.
So I just kind of wanted to, you know, do a touch base on where it's been over the year, how you feel about what has happened, how you feel about, you know, the way things have gone and everything else. I'm just curious as to... is it what you expected so far, better, worse? I mean, you were, at the time, you hadn't seen this. You didn't really know anything
yeah.
other than you were aware of the Illinois football program. So
yeah, so, you know, I think the most direct answer to that is really just talk about from the first time we met at Penn State on the field to when we were at Penn State this year, right?
Yes.
And to me, there's the definition of growth, right? So
yep.
I was a bystander on the sideline as a head coach that was going to meet his team for the first time the next day, watching them compete, watched them like I told them that day after that. I saw them fight. I saw them be competitive. I saw them, execute the plan that they were given, right? And unfortunately, it wasn't good enough. And I forget what the score of that game was. It was pretty lopsided in the end.
Yeah.
And then to come full circle this year, and the next time we walked off the field at Penn State as I was the head coach, we went into a locker room that celebrated college football history record book victory against a ranked opponent on the road. Like
yep.
that was kind of a culmination of me of how far we've grown. Not where we wanted to, you know, be, but it gave a great perspective on how much that team has changed, right? And
yep.
the only people that knew that were those, ever since the outside world could see it, but no one knew it as much as that team in the locker room, right? And that's what I kind of shared with them the next day was, you know, what I love to do is talk about history, right? There's people that read about history, there are people that make history. And you have a chance to do that, right? Everybody in this building has the opportunity to change Illinois football into sustained success. And that's not very common, right? Like, if you're a kid that goes to a perennial program that's, you know, for 50 years been at the top of college football and done all this and done all that, that's great. But now you're just a part of their history. You don't get to make your own.
Yep.
And that's what Illinois has.
Yeah. I've described that game as, so after you and I did that interview, you know, we were kind of down under the stadium there. We had just come off the field. And I think Penn State had just scored to maybe tie, because Illinois was up 21-14 or
right.
something like that,
yep.
you know, first quarter, whatever. So I did a bunch of stuff. By the time I got back to my seat in the press box after all of that, it was, I think Penn State scored three times,
right.
basically. So this thought of, while I was doing one interview, they scored 21, and this year... and they scored 18, but really 10 in, like, that was the big thing to me.
Yeah.
Walking away from there was like, okay, you know, last year games that happened, and even the years before, there was just this moment where it got away quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And this past season, I mean, besides Virginia, yep. which was still kind of close until the third quarter, was right. still in question. There weren't any, boy, that really got out of hand fast. So, you know, that seems to be the biggest change I've seen from my vantage point
right.
of, you know, of seeing that year to year.
And that's probably an easy thing to point to with quantitative numbers, right? But, mm-hmm. like, the only number I worry about is, right, is the number at the end of the year, right? Number of wins, number of losses, and where we are. Like, I can't sit around and try to be close, right? And that's the one thing I got after him a little bit when we got back. When I got back in the building after Iowa was, listen, I appreciate what you did, right? I appreciate the preparation you did. I wasn't there. I watched on TV. I saw you play your tail off. I saw you compete. I saw the intensity. But close does not count, right? Like, you can't be applauded or congratulated on trying to make it close, right? Like, that's the mentality I need to get out of here, right? That's the mentality that will allow you just to be average for a long time. What we have to do is set the standard of, you know, to be able to, compete and win four quarter games is the standard, right? Like, mm-hmm. you can't expect the standard to be, oh, they play really hard, or, you know, they're tough to play, or they're physically tough, right? Like, it's the expectation to win. It has to be that's got to be the DNA that trumps everything.
So since we're talking about DNA, so the main thing I've noticed, and probably the main thing I've written about in this first year, is, okay, let's go back to when you did the Smith Center tour. You did a little presentation of Football 101.
Mm-hmm.
You shared the chart of, you know, field drives position. To start inside mm-hmm. the 10, have this, you know,
yep.
and you base football off of that.
Right.
You know, field position is everything, and you had Blake Hayes, which, you know,
yep.
you know, did a lot for that. So, especially in the Minnesota game, I noticed that. So, you have the lead, you get that 14-0 lead. You know, on Twitter, fans are pretty upset with the conservative play calling inside the 10. You know, Minnesota pinned you at the 5, and it was a 3-and-out, and it was like, oh, you know, panic, throw the ball down the field. How much in those situations are you looking at that and saying, look, very low probability we're going to score, and if we turn this over, we could flip the whole game yeah. with a bad passer. We need to be conservative. Like, how do you view all those kind of things?
Well, twofold, staff? Right? You got to know your team, right? So if we play complementary football, there's going to be games where you know that we're going to play very well defensively, and we feel that, you know, as long as we don't give it away, they can't earn it necessarily. And then for mm-hmm. us to be able to execute our plan, I think teams that, you know, everything from how they play offense to the tempo they play with to the explosive playmakers they have to the dynamic element of how they score points, you know. I remember, you know, going against a certain team in the SEC where, you know, they had X number of games where they scored at least a touchdown or more on defense, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. so that brings actually into how you call a play offensively.
Yeah.
You know, just like I don't check Twitter to find out how to coach a team on game day, right. I really don't pay attention to that and how I approach our game plan. But I would say this, I think as a head coach, the one thing I've learned through now going into my 14th year is you each game is its own, like Lou Holtz used to talk about, you just got to be the best team in the stadium that day, right? Like, yeah. it, you know, we went to play Penn State, you know, I shared it with the team, like, this is us against them. Now they're going to have 100,000 more, mm-hmm. right? But there's not one fan or one player from their national championship seasons that is going to factor into this game, right? Yeah. It's going to be about the two teams that show up on Saturday, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And I felt we would be offensively very – I thought if we played a physical style of football against them, I thought it would prevail.
Yeah.
And I thought defensively, if we just kept the ball in front of us and didn't give up big plays, that we would play really, really well.
Yeah.
And that's kind of how it played out.
The biggest – like, you know, I felt like – you know, I'm writing about you, so I'm trying to yep. figure out your mentality, if you will, as a coach and how you approach it. And what I compared the Minnesota game to when I wrote about it was the Wisconsin-Illinois game 10 years ago, which you were part of.
Mm-hmm.
Aaron Henry had an interception in that game.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember that game. That was Ron Zook's final season.
Yep.
Illinois had started 6-0, and that was 6-4.
Right.
The four Wisconsin scoring drives started at the 40, the 39, the 20, and the 2. So Illinois' defense was able to stop most every Wisconsin drive from the Wisconsin end.
Right.
But a muffed punt And no, it wasn't even a muff punt. The punter dropped the ball. Yes. Punter dropped the ball. You had it pinned at the one, and the punt only went to the 39. You know, four short drives. Aaron Henry's interception set it up at the 30 or whatever, and that was that.
That was so game
what,
here.
Game here, yeah. Yes. What could have been, Illinois led at halftime, playing well, but just field position was basically that entire game.
So I'm walking out on the field at halftime of that mm-hmm. game, right? Mm-hmm. And in a position to declare which way we wanted to kick. So, like, the coaches were on me. I remember Bob Bostad and Paul Chris were like, hey, do we want to take the win in the fourth quarter? Mm-hmm. And I said, if this game is a game in the fourth quarter, we won't win it. Mm-hmm. Right? So we kicked off with the win in the third quarter, pinned them deep, had a three, and then they muffed the punt, and that changed the momentum of the game.
Yep.
And it really ended up being a non-game in the end, right, because we took over the game.
Yep.
At that time, as a head coach, I knew we were on the road. If we played in a tight game, the odds were not in our favor to win it. Mm-hmm. But if we established the mentality that we could play with, we had a really good team that year. Mm-hmm. If we started playing well, and at halftime we made some adjustments, talked mm-hmm. about, I like the look in their eye, I wanted to be aggressive coming out in the third quarter. And I almost go back to, in my entire time at Wisconsin, I go back to that moment because my coaches were telling me, to take the win for the fourth quarter, mm-hmm. and I specifically said, because I wasn't on my headset, I said, tell the coaches we're taking the win in the third quarter, because mm-hmm. if this game is close in the fourth, we won't win it.
Yep, yep. As an Illinois fan in the stands that day, I'm, you know, there's nothing more frustrating than you're probably playing better than, mm-hmm. you know, the Illinois had more yards that day, yep. more first downs, more everything else, but it's slipping away from you because of all that, you know, was it Monty Ball that year in 11? I don't remember. Whatever Wisconsin tailback that I was going to get 1,500 yards. You know, the run was established. You knew he was going to get his yards, and you're just watching it start to slip away because of all the normal things. And so that's, you know, the Illinois fan mentality, which is what I write from, has always been that. Yeah. And I think that's why this season was a breath of fresh air, because of, you know, the turnover margin, the field position, you know, I don't know if you follow any analytics, but in Bill Connolly's on ESPN, his SP Plus, as of right now, he has the Illinois special teams number one nationally, just on all the metrics he follows of setting up field positions, punter that'll pin you deep, returners that won't muff punts, you know, all the different little stats that he does. And I'm just curious if that's really a big emphasis, or it's just a function of how everything, you know, went in all these games this year.
So I don't know who the guy is you just quoted, right?
Yes.
I have never read it, never will, never have. But I do know this, that if you want to write the story, exactly how it plays out, mm-hmm. that game you just mentioned is the definition of most games are lost, not won.
Yes.
Right?
100%.
So I know Wisconsin won that day, mm-hmm. but in my opinion, Illinois lost it.
100%.
Okay, so like, I kind of knew that going into that game. Like, I know how we were wired. I know how our players thought, how our coaches, right? But mm-hmm. we didn't play well for a half, right? And Illinois played extremely well.
Yep.
And I just felt in the second half, if we could get something to flip the script in one play, mm-hmm. I thought it would take over, right? And this year, that script played out in a lot of our wins. And I would say that when we defined how games are lost, that's when it happened, right? So
definitely.
I do enjoy analytics. I do like reading things mm-hmm. and seeing things, but mm-hmm. A lot of times analytics always focus on the good. Mm-hmm. They don't chart what happens when the decision is made and it goes wrong,
sure,
what the bad of that is.
Yeah.
Because if you're a team that is maybe is expecting to win or favored to win, and you go an analytic mm-hmm. that doesn't prevail, a lot of times that can cause the other team to win the game, mm-hmm. and that's what you want to avoid.
Yes. It's interesting to, I didn't plan to focus on the 2011 Wisconsin game here, but, you know, my mind is alive because I remember writing that. Like, that was the day, as a writer, I was like, I just don't think it's going to happen for Zook, and I think this might be it. You know, this was going to be a win to get to 7 wins and this and that, but for whatever reason, you know, Illinois outplayed and this and that, but just because of field position and little things and mistakes, the whole thing slipped away. And if you're going to have, you know, he had brought in talent, he had brought in all these things. I'm not here to drag yep. on Zook, but, you know, the one thing lacking was those specific details.
Yeah.
You know, just the little things that can make what should have been a 21-10 Illinois win into a 28-17 Wisconsin win. And so it's interesting because that, you know, in my 10, 11, 12 years of writing about this football team, that game sticks out maybe more than any other of like where I started this whole, like, there has to be an emphasis on special. People need to pay attention to the wind in this stadium.
That's why we practice in it all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's talk wind then. So there have been very many frustrating moments in that stadium with a kicker who's standing on the goal line, and everybody knows the kickoff isn't only going to get to the 15 and that type of thing. How do you approach the wind in this kind of wind tunnel stadium?
So in all of my experiences prior to coming here, it had always been from a visiting perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I said is literally the moment I took in, bought into my role here as a head coach was we're going to practice as much and as often as we can in Memorial because it is a distinct advantage, and because there is so much wind, our players need to know it and understand it more than anybody, right? Mm-hmm. So the only way you understand that and become comfortable with it is to play in it, right? Mm-hmm. So then I explained to our players why we're doing that, right? Like, they need to know where the sun is at a certain time of day. Mm-hmm. They need to understand the wind. I think our kickers, you know, as a coach, I've said this several times, like, I learn more from our players than you can ever imagine, right? And mm-hmm. Blake Hayes and McCourt are always out on the field during breaks, you know, feeling and understanding. They'll be up. They would come up to me at the beginning of each quarter and say, Coach, 35, right? Which meant, all right, we can snap the ball on 35 and kick a 53-yard field goal and feel good. Or he'd say 33, right? Which mm-hmm. means now that we're down to a 51-yard field goal, right? So, like, they literally gave me information within the – and now – even though those seniors have moved on, who's watched that for 3 years now?
Caleb Griffin.
Hugh Robertson. So, like, seniors always graduate, but traditions never do. Mm-hmm. That doesn't just have to do with the Illini walk mm-hmm. or how they sing the fight song
right.
or what uniform they wear.
Right.
It's a tradition of how they prepare for a game, right? And those guys are special.
So when they're out there, because I noticed that this year, that, you know, visualization. Part of that is win. Part of that is how does this feel? What is this?
What's the wind doing?
Yeah, what's the wind doing? And that's determining that kind of thing.
So I think if you interview those guys, they probably give you a great perspective, right? Yeah. So, like, I literally, the first team meeting we ever had, then I grabbed a specialist and I met with them. Mm-hmm. And they're, like, looking at me like I have six heads because they've never been in a meeting with the head coach before, right?
Yeah.
And I said, hey, the thing I want you to understand is what do we need to be successful? So they wanted kicking nets.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, done, right? Like, they want to talk about kicking balls, done, right? Like, what can we do to make you have success, right? So now I came at them and said, listen, here's what's going to happen on game day. I'm going to let you prepare, execute, and tell me what you can do. I'm going to ask James McCourt where he can kick a field goal from, right? And I'm going to write it down, and he thinks that's where he's going to kick the ball from. But then I'm going to go to Blake Hayes, who's your holder, and I'm going to go to Ethan DeBell, who's your snapper, and I'm going to say, where did he make them from? Where should we be good from? And I'll tend to, you know, James McCourt, when I go to you and ask you if you can kick a kick, mm-hmm. you're always going to tell me yes.
Yeah.
So I don't want to go to a kick that you can't make and ask you to be successful.
Yeah.
And have you out on the field and don't know if you can make it.
Yep.
That leads to nobody having success.
Yeah.
So they'd never heard any of that conversation, right? So on that little manila folder that I have, like, I have two arrows for field goals and two arrows for punt. Mm-hmm. And the one with punt is telling me where we want to pooch kick or sky kick on the ball. And the field goal is where we can maximize a field goal going both directions. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So this makes me think, like, so you're obviously a big picture guy. You know, you're obviously, you know, you have leadership qualities and you have head coach qualities and Barry Alvarez told you this years before. And, you know, he had seen this in you and this and that. So given that, the years with the Giants and the Patriots, were those frustrating in that other people were making these big decisions and you were, you know, position coach or whatever? I'm not trying to degrade that.
No.
I'm just saying, like, is it, you know, since you're kind of built around this kind of leadership thing, was it, you know, going back and being somebody in the organization, was that difficult?
No, I think actually I was speaking earlier, right? So my experiences as a head coach, I draw on dramatically, right, from one time at Wisconsin, Arkansas. But it was my 3 years in the league when I was a position coach that I probably grew the most in my time here, right? Mm-hmm. So it really got me back to the basics of how to coach fundamentals, how to teach kids, how to give them tools that they can use. But I would go and sit in everybody's meetings, even though I might have coached. My first year, I didn't have a position, so I mm-hmm. literally drifted from any room that mm-hmm. was important. Coach had me meet with, I literally met with every rookie about football, right? So I met with O linemen, D linemen, DBs, receivers, wideouts, tight ends, DBs, linebackers, and I would talk football one on one with them, right? Mm-hmm. So that was unbelievable. And then I get what you're saying, Robert, but like I never viewed it as I didn't ever, like, you know, we're playing for a Super Bowl. I didn't, I never played in a Super Bowl. Like, I never coached in the NFL. So I literally, maybe I'm wired a little bit different, but I didn't ever look at it as I can do that. I just wanted to be great at what I did. I go back to, right, like when I got the head job at Wisconsin, I heard from a variety of different people in my past, but Bill Snyder told me that day, you know, you're going to have a million people reach out to you today and congratulate you on the head coaching. But the reason you're the head coach today is because of who you are. Right? Like, he goes, I know I had an influence on you. I know Hayden Fry had an influence. I knew Barry Alvarez had an influence. Mm-hmm. But you got the job today because of who you are. You can be influenced by the people you've been around, but it's not them that's becoming the head coach, right? And I've seen too many assistants that try to emulate somebody they can't be have failure. I can only be Brett Bielema. But I saw the NFL opportunity as 2 years with possibly the greatest head coach that's ever played the game, right? And I saw him literally every day and out of season. Fortunately for me, I had a great relationship with him, and I saw him on the most minute details. I remember sitting on a Saturday night before we played the Dolphins in December, and he brought up an email that I had sent in October, in August, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Coach, I don't I remember that email, but refresh me. Uh-huh. And he just pulled it out. He's like, why did you say this? And I'm like, well, I remember seeing this, this, and this, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the attention to detail that that guy had, right?
Yeah,
so, so like, it, to me, it was an internship into greatness, right? And then the Giants, you know, Joe was one of my – he was an assistant coach with me at New England, where he and I spent a lot of discussions about what was happening big picture, right?
Yep.
And so he and I had some conversations on a base level. Now we're having them on the Giant level because I really wanted to run his player development. Mm-hmm. That was – I could have stayed and coached in New England and been a part of another really good team, but I went to Giants and I wanted to be on the grassroots of installing a new program.
Yeah.
That was, to me, was very fun.
Yeah. So when you get to this, like in the last year, has it – I'll just give you a personal example. So, you know, I think you know a little of my story. Then I did something else, started a blog, grew into this, then I was credentialed, then I started doing it more and more, and then I just flipped careers and started doing this full time. And, you know, there's a lot of stresses that come with that and this and that. But still, in a sense, like, the feeling I have when I write something good, I never had that in the 24 years where I was a landscape architect in St. Louis, Missouri.
Right.
Like, I have this new, like, yes, this really fits.
Right.
Do you have that? Like, when you're a head coach,
100%.
Do you have this, like, yeah, this is
peace.
This is it.
Yeah.
This is the stuff. Like, this is kind of what I was designed for.
And I never really had thought about that, right? So when I took over at Wisconsin, I just jumped in a role and was, you know, obviously had success. I went to Arkansas, and even though we didn't go to a bowl game, went to three straight bowls. They've never done that since, right? Yeah. Like, it's funny to me, like, I see a lot of the things that they're accomplishing now, and then they said, well, the last time this happened was in, well, I know when it was happened last, 15, right?
16,
So like, I find it interesting that I really didn't have that feeling until I didn't have it, right? So, like you just asked me, did I ever, like, frustrated I wasn't making a decision? I never was, but I knew that I was going to eventually do this again, right? Mm-hmm. So Coach Belichick called me the day after I got let go, right? And he described a lot of different things, but he said, you know, right now you're frustrated, you're disappointed. I'm sure you're feeling, what could I have done different? He said, but just make sure that you start today preparing for when that opportunity comes again. You've never been any better than that next. And that's all I did for 3 years.
Yeah.
I went to college programs, right, on pro days. And everybody thought I was just there looking at that linebacker, that DB. I was looking at their building. I was looking at their structure. I was looking at their so for 3 years, I got to basically do some FBI work on a program that hopefully whoever and wherever it ended up being, I was going to take over. Now, I had no knowledge at the time that it was going to be in my home state in a division that I've played at, coached at, and won at, right? I mean, it's very unique in the fact that I've been in this conference at two competitive schools and won a championship as a player, as an assistant coach, and as a head coach.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if there's anybody in college football that can correlate to that. So there is a very fulfilling thing for me, like, in a Stefan Schwartzman was one of my best friends from back in Wisconsin. He's also a cabinet maker, so he's helping me with my new house.
Yeah,
and we've been going back and forth after the season ended. My wife's really been doing that whole, and she's doing an amazing job. And Steph wanted to talk to me about the overall cost and what this house is going to, from a cabinetry standpoint. And so we had this conversation. And the next day, he sent me something, and he doesn't even know what he. I mean, he does know what he said. He said, "It feels so good to have you back where you belong, heading of the ship or running the ship."
Yeah.
And I'm just like, here's one of my best friends who, even though he played at Hope College in Michigan, right? He's been at every one of my games in my career. He came out when I was in the NFL. He is a very successful businessman in what he does, but he realizes how much more at peace I am in charge of a program.
Did you have, I mean, let me dig in on that a little bit. So, again, I'll set it up with an example of myself. So, you know, I'm doing my job. My wife calls me in January of 2020. She's like, "You're not going to believe this. My old boss just called and said, would you consider a job in Champaign, Illinois?" And we're like, oh, you know, now it's nerves.
Right.
Like, oh, wait, are we doing this? Like, we have talked in the future. Like, what if I ever quit my job and just did the website full time? And, you know, well, now she just randomly gets a job offer here.
Right.
Not connected to anything I do for the next 3 weeks with her interviewing for that job and everything else. I'm as nervous as I can be because now you clicked in my head. Yeah. Like, wait, this could happen.
Right.
You know? Did you get like that when Josh Whitman first called you of like, wait, I've been preparing on the side here for 3 years in my division. I was born in Illinois. Yeah. Like everything you just listed, were you like nervous?
You know,
like,
how really did that go? Not to be 100% transparent. Like even the year before when there was a time where it didn't look great here, and I'm like, I remember talking to my group of people, my representatives, and said, "Hey, if and when this happens, I would love to be interested as much as I possibly can," right?
Yeah.
And then this year, or the year I got the job, last year, we got out of a game on a Sunday. We played at home. It was an afternoon game, so a 3 o'clock game. So we're getting in the locker room, you know, and I have a bunch of text messages, and it said, "Hey, the Illinois job's open." It was like one after the other. "Hey, Illinois is open. You'd be a great fit at Illinois."
Yeah, yeah.
But none of them were for Josh Whitman, And I didn't have Josh's contact info.
Uh-huh.
So really, what I did is I just tried to find a way, and I don't know how it happened that I secured Josh's contact, and then he had obviously contacted mine, and then I got a text from him on Monday, I believe it was, or whatever it was, that. And I showed my wife, I'm like, "Hey, he's going to reach out to me." And then it was just a whirlwind. I never really, once I met with him and even though it was through Zoom, I just felt there was something very natural and genuine.
Yeah.
So I never really had that nervous feeling. Like I was excited more than nervous.
Yeah. Interesting.
So I never really had that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, then did you have, you know, I've had my moments after moving here of this like, holy crap, that actually happened. Like all of this fell into place.
Yeah.
Like, do you reflect like that or are you just a forward
mover? I think when my mom and dad were sitting on this couch,
before
the Nebraska game when Josh surprised me and then after the game to celebrate with them and my family and to be on the field and have my girls say ILL, like it's just like, but I would also say like, you know, I'm very, you know, one of the things I appreciate about you, the things I've read that like, You try not to be emotional, right? You try to look at it like, I know you're a fan, I get it. Like, you also try to remove yourself and you know, look at it from an outside in. And as a head coach, I always have to be that way, right? Yep. Like, I can't get emotionally involved in a moment.
Yep.
I want Illinois to win as bad as anybody, right? So, like, a 4th-and-1 decision, a punt decision, a KOR decision, a defensive decision.
Yeah.
Like, all those things are under my umbrella. And if you tend to, you know, weigh down too much about things that have happened, you're never going to be able to make the next decision be the best. And that's the part I really enjoyed.
Do you have a sense of the encouragement in the family, like
100%.
Like, you know, I've been around this a long time, and I've not, you know, I interact with friends on group texts and people on Twitter and people who email me, and you know, if I go to any holiday, you know, some great uncle will be, well, he's going to want to talk Illinois football,
right?
You know? Like, so I have all these different, you know, ways of gauging fan base excitement, and to be honest, there's way more excitement right now than even when Lovey was in a bowl in 2019 or even Tim Beckman in a bowl in 2014. I think a lot of it is the four Big Ten wins.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is only, I think, the seventh time since 2000 there's been four Big Ten wins.
Right.
You know, it's three or less every year. Do you have a sense of, you know, it was a difficult year and there were, you know, maybe this miss and that miss and one more thing here is a bowl. But do you have a sense that this 5-7 was you know, a big step forward?
Well, I think the thing that I've learned in 51 years at Hearth is, you know, you traditionally get what you earn, right? Yes, there's a lot of winners and there's things that happen unprecedented, but we got a 5-7 record because that's what we deserved, right? We didn't do enough things in the wins that were almost there to win the game, and that's the result of our loss, right? So as a head coach, I have to change that math, right? I get the understanding of why people are excited, right? But I also think it's built off of reality, right? Like when Brett put in front of me that was my 14th, I knew it was my 14,000 yard rusher, but when they said that equaled the number of 1,000 yard rushers in the history of the University of Illinois program, that makes me just like, that to me is like, okay, now I know where we can go. I had the Landon Lincoln Trophy here until yesterday because we're getting in a grade for our trophy case, and Josh came in here the day after the game, and he's like, oh, I've never actually touched this, right? And I'm like,
yeah,
what? Like, yeah. So perspective is everything. Yeah. When Brett showed me that, you know, four wins had equaled a Big Ten win record, that the last time they did it, they won a Big Ten title. I'm like, holy Toledo! So I think the reality of what can be here at Illinois, I probably didn't even understand, right? Like, I knew it could be good. Like, I'm just like, why can't this happen, right? Yeah. Well, I realize now there are reasons that it can't happen, and those have to change, right? Yeah. So there's so many steps in the right direction. On the field, we definitely grew. I get it. We're at the end of the year at Northwestern, we could play and beat a lot of teams. The way we're playing a quarterback, the way we're playing a guard, the way we're playing defensively, like things were really – begin. Now you got to repeat it again with a new team, new concept, new chemistry. But, you know, off the field, what we've done in the state of Illinois, what we've done, you know, with the fan base, in the university, what we've done with another a record in the academics, like, there are just too many things going in the right direction. I can see it's coming, just people tend to cumulatively only handle one of those things. Like, somebody, if he's just going to base off what he sees on the field, it really doesn't matter what we do anywhere else, right?
Yeah,
if somebody's a big recruiting guy and they just want to talk about recruiting, they're going to be mildly happy, but they're not happy that we didn't sign any four or five stars, right?
Right.
So I think for me as a head coach, I got to always see the bigger picture.
And how much is, you know, it's a difficult question to ask. Like, how much is the lifestyle, the college town, the... You know, how much does this all play into the big picture of, like, what you want, you know, in the this next phase of your life?
Yeah,
you know?
So,
like, go ahead.
I sum it up like this, right? And I love recruiting, right? The only negative I ever say to recruiting is I hate traffic, right? So, sounds like a little thing, but to me, to sit idle and not move drives me crazy, right? So, I love the fact that I haven't seen a traffic issue in Champaign-Urbana, right? The only traffic issue I want is game day, right? Because then I can handle it. So, like, the city of Champaign-Urbana, this community, the house that we're building, like, it's like storybook, right? Like, it's just like, it's just perfect for what.
That's kind of what I'm asking.
Oh, gosh,
That's important in life.
100%.
You know,
and me at 51 wasn't the same as 36, right? So, like, that's definitely.
I've had this conversation with so many friends. You know, I'm 48. Friends are all 48, 49. We're all having, it's not a midlife crisis, but it's that, okay, look, I chased this job for 20 years and I wanted to get this title.
Right.
And now I don't know if this is what matters to me. Yeah. You know, everybody has that phase at this age. How much does that play into what you're doing?
Obviously gave up a career to pursue something you love. So every day you wake up and you're like, what can I do today to be getting better, right? Yes. Like every day.
Yes.
I don't think everybody has that in their life. There's a lot of people that are doing jobs that they're pissed at work.
Yeah.
So then they're pissed when they go home.
Yep.
And then they're pissed all day, right? 100%. Like, I would give Coach Underwood a lot of, like, so I probably talked on him maybe Wednesday or Thursday before I took the job. Greg Lansing is one of my best friends, was a head basketball coach at Indiana State, and he knew Coach Underwood and connected us. And some of the beginning conversations I had with him just about living here in Champaign and what what he thought this place could bring was very encouraging to me before I ever got here. And then, he and I have literal conversations daily just about, like, there's so many mirrored things. Like, he's been great when things weren't going well, and then he's been great when things – And again, I think a lot about, like, for me, every place I've ever been that had sustained success, those two programs were the champions, right? Like, and then there was a great chemistry. Like, I love the just the genuineness that Josh has blended into the athletic department. You know, like,
yeah,
you know, Smalley, right, with men's golf, and mm-hmm. and Coach Hartlett with baseball, and you know, then dabble into women's sports. Like, you know, it's a pretty cool environment. Coach Thomas, right? Like, he reaches out to me and my wife right away, and like a women's volleyball coach, like, that is like engaged as he is with us, right? Like, it just, it fosters a lot of great will.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Underwood has that story of when he was at Western Illinois, his secretary at the time said, write down your dream job. And he wrote down Illinois.
Right.
This was like 2001, and he's watching, you know, a Elite Eight team and this and that.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like there's a component to that.
Yeah.
I've heard Barry Alvarez speak of Madison in that way, that yeah. he, around there, he just got to this place where everything fit, and he never wanted to leave. Like, he wanted to be AD and this and that. It's just like the fit is like seemingly very, very important in your business.
I think without a doubt. And, you know, I was maybe, you know, from somebody's outside world, a perfect fit where I'd been at previously. But for me and my point in my life, it wasn't, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the decisions you made in the past helped define who you are ahead. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't be happier than the spot we're in right now, what we're doing and how we're doing it.
Well, I think that's a good spot to end.
So perfect.
I appreciate it,
Coach. Absolutely, man.
Thank you.
Yep.